This is Jean Shinoda Bolen, Goddesses in Every Woman, September 1985, tape 4 of 4.
That whatever the decision, if it was one that they didn't make, then they will either regret that they didn't have the child, and that regret will come up later, or they will regret the decision that they did have the child, and the resentment might be directed against the child itself. The difference is, whenever a woman takes a stand and makes a hard choice and is willing to live with whatever the consequences are, then she isn't resentful in the same way. She may not even be resentful at all. She has made a decision of living with the decision and the cost of it, and somehow she has much more energy available to her as choice maker than she would have had if she had gone along with someone else's decision. And abortion versus having a child is one crucial time when this happens. So does the decision about whether to make a commitment to a particular person. There are always, or often, decisions inside in which one goddess will say one thing and another goddess will speak for some other place. And it's important for women to decide which of the goddesses, which of the patterns will prevail, dependent upon how strong that pattern truly is. And if possible, the decision has to be made also on timing that looks out for her. And I think about a metaphor that I've long used in my practice. It came from Joe Wheelwright, who's a Jungian analyst now in his late 70s, who taught successive generations of us, and used as a metaphor the idea of a committee. And he said, in effect, that we are all, look at yourselves as a committee. And around that committee table sit the many aspects of yourself. And if you use Jungian ideas, you realize that there would be many different age and both sexes represented around that table. That we all have masculine parts of ourselves, we have babies, we have adolescents, we have perhaps wise old people, and that a committee decision depends on hearing those aspects of ourselves that are concerned with an issue, that we truly tune into knowing those parts of ourselves, and we are willing to hear how important it is from each of those aspects. And it requires to do this an ego who chairs the committee, a good chair, who will not allow one pattern, for example, to dominate. Now, I'm saying that the committee metaphor is much more complex than the seven Greek goddesses or the seven archetypes. For a shorthand description of what we are doing with these particular archetypes, just imagine that table having seven goddesses around it, and ego as chair, being willing to listen to all of the various aspects that have some input into the question. You see, if ego doesn't run the show, then maybe a goddess will just almost drown out everybody else because of the intensity of the feeling. Like Aphrodite will be madly in love, and it's like the energy is so infuses the psyche of the woman that that's Aphrodite is the only consideration. Well, if she's can go inward and reflect and feel out the Aphrodite part of her, yes, but have some sense, for example, of how well she in fact knows this other person. And then if she tunes into what, say she is a woman who is married and is having an affair or falls in love with someone else, and then it's like listening to those other committee members, and the Demeter part of her might be saying, but look what you're doing to your children if this should end your marriage. And the Hera part of her might be speaking about the infidelity and how that affects her. And the Artemis part of her might be saying, but you know, this is your sexuality and your independence and your experience, and why don't you follow that? And Aphrodite says, this is the most significant feeling you have. You know, live it out. And Hestia might be going inward to a much more spiritual part of her that has a question about, in the big picture, does what really is of concern. And might it be better to become a little detached from all of the clamoring, from Aphrodite, from Demeter, from Hera, and go inward to find some sense of what might be a much more important internal path for her. So Hestia, if she were listened to, might have something to say about that. And Athena might be either out of the picture entirely, or she might be giving the woman some advice as to how to proceed in such a way, strategy-wise, that would cause the least damage. And then there's Persephone, who might be involved in an emotional way and very strongly either dependent upon her husband or dependent upon this new person that's come into her life. And it's a very complex question. And the question may be something that takes a week to resolve, or it may take a year to resolve. And it may depend upon the woman taking one step at a time, because she doesn't see things very clearly. And gradually, as she moves through life, she becomes more aware of what really matters to her. And somewhere along the line, she needs to then decide what she will do. And that's a decision-making process where the woman does not feel victimized by the circumstance. You see, if something happens to you, like an unexpected pregnancy or falling in love, it is something that happens to you. Often there is no blame for the event. Pregnancies have happened through IUDs and foam. With every good intent of not having a baby, there's a pregnancy. People don't go out of their way to fall in love. It is something that happens to them. These are basic archetypal experiences. What matters is what you decide to do once this has happened, what values you decide are important to you, what meanings are most important, and then acting accordingly from that. And this is the way of the path of the choice maker, in that you make a choice based on what you know, what has values, what your values are, and then you live with the decision. And you know that a lot of pain may come with the territory, whichever one you choose. Often it's not as complicated as that. Sometimes it's just how you shall spend the next week or weekend. And sometimes it's sort of fun taking a reading on your committee when you have a free Sunday and you have to decide, what are you going to do? Are you going to do something that is stay at home and have the pleasure, in a sense, if you're Hestia, of being by yourself for a change and getting your house in order? Or are you going to be the Athena part of you and write a report that is important and get a head start and do it this Sunday? Or are you going to be like Artemis and go do some things with some women friends? Or are you going to be like Hera and do something with your husband? Are you going to be maternal Demeter and forget about what you might want to do yourself and chauffeur your kids around because they want to do something that's important? I mean, we have almost every day choices about which goddesses within us will get the golden apple. And the moments in which we go inward and decide, well, what really matters today, which goddess will get the golden apple, is important. Because I remember Rollo Mace saying something to the effect that a kitten grows into a cat, an acorn grows into a tree, an oak tree, and human beings are the only species that, by those decisions that we make, we change and create who we become. That it is by those daily choices that are made either deliberately, or women need to realize that if they sit like Persephone waiting for something to happen, if they decide not to decide, it is in a sense a decision made. That there are these choice points all the time, and the task is to be willing to make the choices, and then the next task is often to be flexible enough to shift your path if, as it turns out, it doesn't feel right to you. So this is what goes into the question about being a choice maker and deciding which of the goddess aspects will be given the golden apple for the day or the year or this particular phase of your life. In the last chapter of Goddesses in Every Woman, I talk about the heroine in every woman and speak about her as being in many ways different from the classic hero. Because in many of the heroine's journey really is not heroically determined by an intent to set out and slay the dragon or steal the golden fleece or win a battle. Rather, a woman often sets out and becomes a heroine by virtue of deciding that she will be a choice maker in her own life and that she will be responsible for deciding what her attitude would be and what her choice will be. And one thing that's very different about women than many men is that most women are affiliative by nature in some way or another and often have companions in the journey. Initially, when I tried to think about literature that embodied the heroine's journey, I found mostly that there weren't any. Most of them, but I found that they could best be represented by, like the hobbits in Fellowship of the Ring or the rabbits of Watership Down. Small creatures who did not feel powerful, yet who set out on a journey because something mattered to them and set out with other companions. And mostly for women, as you embark or are on your journey, wherever it is, there's often a network of friends, women friends or women relatives that are in some way crucial to your journey. And many of them may be different from you. They may have a different set of goddess archetype. For example, the other metaphor of thought is that as you set out on your journey, how many of the goddesses are with you? And if one aspect of yourself feels unable to confront a task, might another aspect of you know the way to do that? And often among women friends, where there's a different kind of energy and a different ability or talents, a friend will speak of a different way to do something that is her way, and it suggests a way that's new to you. So there is this sense of the heroine's journey as being a journey that you take in unchosen circumstances. You didn't ask to be born to that particular family. You didn't ask to be born in this particular culture. Life happens to you along the way. You make decisions, and gradually you go through your life, and as you go through your life, you begin to realize the major forks in the road, the decisions made, the friends, the love that helped sustain you as you went on your journey. And I am continually impressed about how women devalue their life stories, who feel that their lives have been pretty insignificant, and that how helpful it is to start thinking about your life in a metaphor way as being that of a journey and being one in which you may encounter from time to time variations of the same difficulty, and that's a challenge that you must meet over and over again until it's mastered. For example, with all the goddesses I've spoken of, most of them had a difficulty for the woman in whom that goddess archetype is strong. It means that the first time you come up against a problem, if you're Hera of the jealousy, you learn something about yourself. And then if you bond with yet another person, the opportunity to encounter that same shadow part of yourself will come up again. Or if you are Artemis and you cut off people in some fashion you don't mean to do, but they point it out to you, and the next time it comes up again, there's an opportunity to do it differently. But the tug of the archetype will always be in one direction, and then the human woman takes and makes choices about it. Also, one thing that's very different between the goddess archetypes and human women is the goddesses each are every goddess is a pattern that lives out its own story, regardless of whom it lives in. The goddesses stay much the same. They don't change, except within the parameters of that particular goddess story. But a human woman can have her own very individual story, because though these seven patterns may play a part, what she decides to do, which goddess she honors, which goddess she refuses to listen to, all help shape who she is. And I think about the potential in the human woman to be, in a sense, much greater than any one goddess, because she can take from all of the goddesses some aspect that is significant or helpful or helps her to grow, and in the end be an individual person or an individuated person, a singular person with, in a sense, her own personal myth. And part of what's exciting about talking mythology is to get the sense of how one can look at one's own life and be excited by it as a story. And each of you are at a particular time in your life where, wherever you are, whatever your age is, whatever you are in terms of what your choices are, it's like the next step and the next step and the next step will involve coming up against making decisions, valuing who you are. There will be an opportunity to stand for something of value in yourself or sell it out. And to know what those choices are and to make decisions based on them really can give life a whole different dimension. It may look different from the, it may look undramatic from the outside, but from the inside there's the sense of making those choices that truly shape who you are. And I am hoping that in the ahas of meeting some of these goddesses that you have all had opportunities to meet different aspects of yourself and to decide which of them you want to help to grow and which ones you want to stay conscious of because they give you some troubles. And as a last embodied symbolic part, because this is the end of this seminar, Anthea will be doing her last segment, and then she and I will do something with this whole group that I think will be of real value to all of us. Now, I'm used to being a academic sort of lecturer, by and large. I'm used to giving talks and leading seminars where what I do is what I do. So I talk about the subjects and present new ideas. In the last 2 years, I have become increasingly aware of the need to bring in that other side, to illustrate, to make more feeling, symbolic, and colorful what I am talking about, and Anthea has carried that part of the program. There is also an invitation that we want to extend to all of you to do at the very end of this workshop a ritual that involves all of us. And I must say, as a kind of academic therapist sort, I've never been much of a joiner in groupy sort of things. I'm not the kind of person that feels at all comfortable. In fact, I get a little shy at doing things when people say, invite group participation. I would rather sort of sit out and watch. It always seems safer. And I would imagine a lot of you are like me in that. And with that in mind, I would like you to learn what I learned, which is to participate in a ritual in which we are well aware that for many of you it might be a first time, and so we won't ask you to do anything unless you want to do it. And if you do it, I think there is a possibility that you get a sense of what ritual brings to a group of women and how it provides a sense of affiliation and nurturing. So this part of the program is Anthea's, and the ritual will be something that she and I will do together.
Stephanie, and I'd like to, it's just about laying out some cloths in the center. of the circle. There's nothing complicated about it. We're just going to make, we are going to change the gestalt of the room and make it into a Hessian circle so that we focus on the middle. This is the more of the patriarchal structure where you get the guru up here and you're down there knowing nothing, as it were. So what we want to do, what we've been talking about today, is that you know everything, essentially, that we know. And if you could get Athena and Hestia together, you could also write books on goddesses and all sorts of other wonderful things. So we will, in a minute, change the room, and we will focus on the center, which is empty. And that center will be simultaneously the Mount Olympus place of the goddesses and the Hestian heart, and it will also be the rainbow of the possible you. So is there anyone here who would like to, at least for today, claim Persephone? Why don't you come and take her cloth? She's the goddess of the flowers, of the new possibilities. And if you just go sit with it for a minute. Is there anyone here who would like to take Demeter's cloth, the mother? And Hestia's cloth. You were the first one I saw. Everyone, there was a lot of energy on Hestia. Did you just see that? And Artemis, goddess of the woods and the hills. And the gold of Athena, the thinking woman. Anybody want to take Athena? So let's begin by then making a statement. And everything you do in the world is really a ritual. And that's something that I've tried to do with you today, is sort of make it up as we go along. And you can get into drama that way and have a really good time. So as you do this, think of claiming Hestia in you as she takes the right to depose the gurus and claim her own knowledge and step into your own priestesshood and your own goddesshood, and with Hestian clarity and attention to beauty and order and quiet and meditation, as you move, let's move the chairs to the outside of the room, and as you do, wait a second, as you do that, think within you of the particular vulnerable Persephone quality in you that's sort of fading into the woodwork, as Jean put it, because it doesn't seem to her that she's viable enough. Whoever that Persephone person is in you, who would be your next step on your heroine's journey, she is the newest flower in your garden, and she may not yet have a voice, and she doesn't want to go between Demeter's womb and Hades' tomb, back and forth, waiting for someone to pull her out and take her to some other dependent position. She'd like to assert herself. So as you move into this circle, put that quality in your mind in the center of the circle, and then we will go further from there. And if you have one of the cloths, just carry it with you. So let's create it by those women who have the cloths. Would you come and would you form together, and you'll have to just do it ad hoc, some kind of a circular pattern with those cloths that represent each one of the energies of the goddesses, and trust yourself to be able to make something out of that. It's a weaving. I'd like to read to you from the I Ching first a little piece. I throw an I Ching every time I do a workshop with people to see what Hestia says about the group and the energy of the group and what I might need to think about. And I got the cauldron, or the Ting, which is the sacred vessel for cooking food to serve to people. And I'd like to read a little from this. All that is visible must grow beyond itself, extend into the realm of the invisible. Thereby it receives its true consecration and clarity and takes firm root in the cosmic order. Here we see civilization as it reaches its culmination in religion. The Ting, or the cauldron, serves in offering sacrifice to the gods. The highest earthly values must be given to the divine. But the truly divine does not manifest itself apart from woman. The supreme revelation of God appears in humanity, in men and women. To venerate yourself is truly a veneration of God. The will of God, as revealed through you and others, should be accepted in humility. This brings inner enlightenment and true understanding of the world, and leads to great good fortune and success. Speaking of the fire, which is the sacred fire that we have in our imagination right now at the center of that circle, The fate of fire depends on wood. As long as there is wood below, the fire burns above. It is the same in human life. There is in a woman, likewise, a fate that lends power to her life. If she succeeds in assigning the right place to life and to fate, thus bringing these two into harmony, she puts fate on a firm footing. I'd like you just now to think a little bit again about the different goddesses as we bring their symbols to the center of the circle. Let's start with Persephone. Not to let your bouquet wither. But if it's time to let something go with the wisdom that Persephone knows in the underworld, you can let the seed split apart and start to grow a new flower. And Demeter. Demeter's ability to grow with her own body, out of her own substance, using all the fabric of herself, another soul, and to let herself be broken somewhat in order to let it out, and then eventually to let it go and rejoice. Hera. Hera, who has made a partner of the sky god. For 5,000 years he's been telling her how things should be done, especially how relationships should be done, and she's in some pain. And she is also the possessor of the cosmic eye. She is a sky goddess, and she knows how to see and how to be a partner with a real truth and depth and fidelity and consistency. Aphrodite. The pearl goddess. She's the one who started it all. You started it yourself when you were willing to get out of the womb and get here in a body, and willing then to work on whatever pain it takes in relating to your true story with your heart, with your body, and with your soul, to get through the relationship into a higher form of relationship, whatever it is, but being who you are and standing for what you love and relating to that with all the radiance that is in you. And as you do, it will make you into a pearl. Artemis. Your little soul and the mirror of Artemis and the goal-directedness, the willingness to shoot for what you want. And if necessary, at the age of 3, which always seems too young, you're always too young to be on the heroine's journey because you're too vulnerable and you're too much of a fledgling and too much of a flower. But Artemis will give you the strength to stay vulnerable enough and safe enough and to aim for what you want and to take care of the little creatures while you do it. And Athena. She's a writer of books about goddesses, about her mother, about the world, about peace, about ecology, about nutrition, about music, about pottery, weaving, and anything that's going to bring us to world peace and be taught in universities for credit. She's not afraid to say what she has to say, and she's not afraid to think about the things that are most vulnerable to her and to spend a lot of time working out how to say them so that other people can listen and understand and then love. And Hestia. She is the whatever it is that lights up your life. She's the whatever it is that's at the middle of you, that allows you to be any and all of these goddesses and to change from one to the other just as that light should guide you. So she's a very, she has been anonymous, but I think what's more true of her now is that she is somebody who's willing to do it whether or not she gets acknowledged. she will do it anyway, because it really matters, and it really creates beauty, and it creates love. So when you choose Hestia as a guiding light, you choose what matters to you, whether or not anyone ever rewards you. And what happens then is that miraculous quality of synchronicity in the Tao, which I think of as the Great Mother, starts to shower gifts upon you. And that's something you'll never know until you choose Hestia. Going to invite you now to form two circles facing each other. This is an invitation. Everything I ask you to join me in is an invitation, and you do not have to do any of it if you don't want to, but we do invite you now. Each person, the one person stands still. Start with the one who has a daughter called Anthea. Every other person step forward one, so that we're going to create two circles rather than one circle. So you stay where you are, and the person next to you steps forward. Go around the circle doing that until we have two circles, an inner and an outer circle. Just roughly, it doesn't have to be exact. Just with sort of halves. And as you do that, think about the fact that you're different from the person you just stepped forward from. You probably have a different goddess working in you. And you are still, however, you are a sister, and you are related to the people who stand in the other circle. It doesn't have to be exact. The goddess is never precise, unless she's Athena. Okay, now stand in the center circle, turn around to face the people in the outer circle. And if you're not too shy to just have a look at each other, just kind of have a look at each other. This is for Aphrodite radiance. Yeah, smile at each other shyly. and then kind of scan around and have a look and see if you can feel some of that warmth and that energy inside of you that just says yes. It's really, you know, yes, we're vulnerable. Yes, we are. And it's okay. And then in your own time, why don't you just close your eyes and go inside to your own radiance, which is the Hestia place inside you. And take a couple of breaths so that you feel yourself on the ground, who is essentially the mother we have always with us. And connect with that Persephone place in you that we talked about as you made the circle. The one place in you that is fading into the woodwork and would love to be affirmed, and who is willing to leave her mother's womb, which is the very vulnerable place in her that needs protecting, go through Hades' womb space, the patriarchal space of defining herself, and then is willing to have a life of her own and stand for what she stands for, no matter what it is, with a sense of honor and independence. And I'd like you to think of a word that represents the quality of that place in you that would like to have her own existence, independent of father and mother and husband. Just about you. Think of a word that gives you the quality and the essence of that part of yourself that wants to be born. And then at any time when it feels like it to you, call upon Artemis's strength, and like an arrow, put the word in the world if you'd like to. Just say it out aloud so that other people can hear it, and just join one another speaking out those words that affirm in the world that little Persephone place in you. Whenever you feel like it, and in any order. Notice how you feel if you say these words. Do you feel vulnerable, or do you feel strong? And affirm inside of yourself your intention to set Persephone free. The Persephone that's in you is paralleled by Persephone in the world, who is the forgotten daughter or the forgotten mother. And there's a lot of, I think, anger in the world that the feminine has been forgotten, and she only can come back through us. She is not disembodied. She only exists in the human female body and in the body of all people. But first, we have to pioneer it for peace and for ecology. And now, as you affirm that word, maybe you open your eyes and take hands with the person standing next to you. So we have two circles. And now we're going to invite you to sing. Not hard. And what we're going to do is we're going to walk in different directions from one another. So the outer circle will walk this way, and the inner circle will walk that way, slowly. Just take your time, because we want to affirm the women who are here. You are the goddess. There is no other. And we're going to sing, "Lean on Me, I Am Your Sister," because that is where the heroine will help her sister do it. And it's not about founding big corporations or anything. It's just about having a sister or two that you can say, "Please, can I lean on you?" or "Do lean on me," whichever way around it is. That's what we'd like to affirm. So I'll start singing, and as you feel comfortable, you can join in with me. It's, "Lean on me, I am your sister. Lean on me, I am your friend. Lean on me, I am your sister. Lean on me, I am your friend. Lean on me, I am your sister. Believe on me, I am your friend. Lean on me, I am your sister. Lean on me, I am your friend. Lean on me, I am your sister. Lean on me, I am your friend. Lean on me, I am your sister. Lean on me, I am your friend. Lean on me, I am your sister. Lean on me." You can slowly stop where you are and acknowledge that if we don't help each other, there is no other help. And I really do mean it. It's real important for us to look at each other and really say yes to anybody's Persephone and help her if she needs to lean, and then we'll get through. And there is something about the first sound in the universe as we close. The last time, you could turn around on the inner circle so that you can face the center again. The first sound that anybody makes when they're born, when they think about getting fed anyway, is Everybody say And then when you get a little more creative, you say Everybody And as you do those two sounds together, you get "Mom." And if you do it more often, you get "Mama, Mama," which has been translated, I think, into "Om." And I think it's the most beautiful prayer there really is, because it's without content, and it just is a sort of a nice sort of milky sort of cry without any demands to "Mama." So we thought that we would like to finish with that very first sound, because we don't know what we need next. So if we just would like to just let a sound out that's kind of a sound of joy and kind of a sound of praise. And if you'd like to consciously do that, closing your mouth and going opening it and going and just do that and join in the sound, any sound that seems appropriate for you, and just let it flow until it stops. that goes out in every direction, right through the world, for as far as it can reach. Jean?
And then we all take those gifts that we have come to claim as being part of the important meaning-given parts of ourselves, and remember those parts of ourselves that bind us to one another through the sensitive feminine and to our own strength. And may we also keep the Hessian fire within us well lit, and may we stay in touch with it in our lives.
There is something we say sometimes, just before we finish, there's something we say sometimes in circles when we are together with women, just to empower each other to go do what we think we need to go do. And that is just, we look at someone across the circle and say, go, and together, as one body, we say, go forth, we are with you. Everybody? Go forth, we are with you.
And that is the end of the tape. Copyright C.G. Jung Society, Seattle, and the speaker. All rights reserved. No copying, please.